In this episode of The Full Nerd, we talk about MSI breaking up with Radeon and motherboard outrage ponies. Welcome, everybody, to episode 299 of The Full Nerd, PC World's premier podcast about PC building. I am your fill-in host, Adam Patrick Murray, but I am not alone for this episode, this final episode of 200 episodes. I have on the line here Gordon Maung. Hello, Gordon.
Hey.
We had a lot of Star Trek talk in the pre-show. If you enjoy Star Trek, then go watch the pre-show. But we're cut off. We're done. We've had our quota. Brad, can you attest to our quota being filled for Star Trek talk?
Done.
Okay, there we go. Brad Charkis, thank you. Will Smith is here at the table with me. Hello, Will.
Hi. I was just really shocked that we all agreed that Aliens vs. Predator 2 actually is the best Aliens movie.
And on the verticals and horizontals, we have Willis Lai. Hello, Willis.
Hello. I am also not alone. Hello, Internet. Next to me is our new video content producer, Alex Estevez. Did I get that right, Alex?
You did. Hello, Woo. PC World.
Yeah, Alex is the new guy on our team. I'm so
Alex.
Glad. Yeah, so glad to have Alex here. We're showing him the ropes for a while. Tune in, I think, next week or maybe the week after that, we're going to do a live build to build him a new video editing rig Ooh. At home. But Alex is an awesome dude. We're excited to have him part of the team here.
Our team's growing.
It's our going. Team's growing. It's growing, yeah. It used to be just me and Willis, and
I need a bigger desk now. We need a bigger desk.
I know, right? Yeah, we're gonna need more than that. But we're here to talk about PC hardware. Before we get to it, we have a couple major announcements to make. Other than Alex starting, I mean, major announcements. Thank
that's
you,
one.
Alex.
That's yeah, one major announcement.
Number two is, hey, if you can't count after 299 is 300. That means next week we will have 300 episodes of this year podcast. Actually, technically more than that because we have some special editions and episode zero.
You snuck some extras in there.
Whatever. We're just going by the actual canonical count. Next week is 300. So you definitely want to tune in. It's going to be fun. We have some things planned. It's going to be a damn good time. Wow. So bring your party hats. If you want to wear a party hat with us while you're watching.
Do we have to bring party hats too, or are you going to provide party hats?
We are going to provide party hats. Nice. Don't worry.
Can I wear party pants?
Usually yes. You wear no pants, so I guess any pants is party pants.
Upgrade. Wait, I missed that memo.
Upgrade. There we go. Look at the Gordon's face. He's like, what?
What are party pants?
Okay, you don't want to know.
You'll see. If you have you'll see. You'll see in episode 300.
You will see, because Gordon will be here for episode 300 in the flesh, in his party pants. So
I'm still trying to figure out AVP2, which one that was, because they were all terrible. But
the next major announcement, which is something that we're going to be talking about for the next couple episodes, I'm going to really hammer it in, is that The Full Nerd is getting its own YouTube channel.
What?
It's true. If you go over to youtube.com/@TheFullNerdPodcast, subscribe over there. We're going to start moving the podcast over to that channel.
Okay.
So we're going to take a little bit of a phase approach because obviously we do it live and we want to make sure that nobody misses out on the Full Nerd experience. So I mean, first up, just go over there and subscribe right now, you know, and then you won't miss anything. So if you love this podcast, go over to @TheFullNerd on YouTube @TheFullNerdPodcast, because unfortunately there's an @TheFullNerd, somebody who never uploaded anything.
There always is.
I know. I hate that. So it's @TheFullNerdPodcast. Go over to subscribe right now. That's where we're going to start putting the show. For the time being, though, we're still going to go live here on PC World, but then we're going to unlist it and put the pre-recorded episode up on the @TheFullNerdPodcast YouTube channel. And then, you know, after a number of episodes, we're going to start just going live over there. So all of your Full Nerd podcast goodness is going to be all in one channel, so it's easy to digest, and hopefully easier for the algorithm to mess algorithm. Things up. I am going to
I linked
there
the
we
algorithms
yeah
and pinned
wait does that
That should be.
Just to be clear, nothing's
happening.
You put
the wrong one. It's at the Full Nerd Podcast.
Oh.
At the Full Nerd Podcast. I know. Yeah.
My bad.
Unpin that quick. Yeah. Good God.
Do not go subscribe to at the Full Nerd. It's the Full Nerd Podcast.
Just to be clear, nothing's happening to PC World.
Nothing's happening to PC
like,
World.
PC
no,
World
no.
is just going to be the same, but like the.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, this. I mean, we started the Full Nerd. I mean, we'll talk about this on episode 300, you know, go over the little bit of history. But we started this before I fully even understood how to do any sort of YouTube stuff. So I was like, it's, you know, Full Nerd is a sub-brand of PC World. Let's just put it on the PC World channel. All right, cool. And then it became pretty obvious a couple years in of like, the algorithm doesn't like long-form live podcasts along with, you know, short-form pre-recorded stuff. You know, now shorts are in the mix, whatever. A lot of algorithm reasons, but really it's a cleaner way to say, hey, if you like this podcast, go subscribe over on that channel. There's plenty of people who watch the podcast that don't watch our normal videos. I mean, you should. We're still the same people. Nothing's changing. It just makes more sense to have it as a separate entity
The algorithm is fickle and angry, and we have to do what we can to feed that monster.
I mean, luckily I don't usually, honestly, because I hate clickbait and all that kind of, you know, chasing numbers or anything like that. We're definitely not into that. But I mean, it's just cleaner to have the podcast
on
a separate one.
We're not going to change the. You made me take all those photos yesterday with like my hands and my hair.
Oh
and
yeah,
and
you're just
face.
Like. Yeah, all the O face kind of stuff. Yeah. So, and then we will still have a playlist on the PC World YouTube channel pointing to the Full Nerd. So they're still tied for now, but it is definitely together. Remember, at the Full Nerd Podcast, not at the Full Nerd.
Hate that other channel who has never uploaded so much.
I know. I should try to reach out to them and be like, hey, listen, come on. I've got $20. What can I do here? Anyway.
Wait, wasn't that,
I'll get you a McRib next time they're in stock.
There we go. Yeah.
Wow. I thought they were never coming back.
Don't break my heart like that.
I'm sorry, Brad.
They have the exact same warehouse full of the McRib made in 1956, and they just defrost a couple million of them every year, and they bring it back.
All right. But yeah. So I'm sorry. I'm gonna keep bringing up this idea of
we gotta
moving.
People.
Yeah, I want to remind people once again. It's gonna be a painful transition in any form. But we just need to rip the Band-Aid off and do it. But my goal is to make sure the people who like to tune into this and watch this, that it's not going to be a problem. And if you're an audio listener, literally nothing changes.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
It's going to be the exact same. So don't worry about it on that end. This is mostly for people who...
So where do we go again for this?
YouTube.com/@thefullnerdpodcast. YouTube.com/@thefullnerdpodcast. Subscribe over there. That's where we're going to start posting the...
This would have been a good announcement for next week. You pulled the trigger too early, Adam.
Well, no. Once again, there's going to be a little overlap. So it's not like all of a sudden we're going to start going over there. There is going to be a little bit of overlap. Yeah. So you have
by the way, when you click subscribe, you got to click the bell.
Oh, yes. Sure thank you. Yeah. Hit the bell if you want to know when we go live with the podcast. There's always a lot of people who are like, hey, how do I know when the next podcast is? This is going to make it way much easier as well.
I got to sign in to subscribe.
No, yeah, you should sign in to subscribe. Believe me,
so
it's,
much
it's going to be worth it.
Is it going to be worth it?
It's going to be worth it.
Okay, it's worth it. I'll do it.
I promise. Anyway, somebody on our Discord last night, because I did announce this for the first time on our Discord yesterday, and somebody got the lucky number 13 sub.
Oh man!
And so they won everything. So every 100 subs, I'll give that person a high five. There we go.
Adam will come to your house and give you a cookie.
There you go. So at the Full Nerd Podcast on YouTube. New channel. But yeah, that's it. That's enough of housekeeping. We need to start moving to talking about some PC hardware. The first one is, it looks like MSI and Radeon were dating. They were holding hands, walking down the street. Everything was happy-go-lucky. And then all of a sudden in the tabloids, I started to read that, there's a breakup that they're not going to be dating anymore. Brad, please tell me what's going on here.
It looks like MSI is not really interested in making Radeon graphics cards, and they didn't announce anything to that effect from the start, but people kind of caught on to it. It started, I think, over the weekend, I had a long weekend last week, so either the weekend or the end of last week, Hardware and Box noticed that pretty much all MSI Radeon 7000 series graphics cards have been disappearing and discontinued from store shelves. So, you know, they tweeted, hey, what's going on here? Blah, blah, blah. Hardware Lux, which is a German outlet, then reached out to MSI to ask them about it. And MSI said, when it comes to graphics cards, our focus at the moment is actually more on RTX cards. Nevertheless, the collaboration with AMD is essential and extremely relevant for us. We see a very positive development, particularly in the area of mainboards / motherboards. So I don't know if they're breaking up, but they're not, you know, they're not BFFs right now. Video cards, you know, famous for leaks, went back and looked, and they discovered that, pardon me for looking down, I have the notes right here on my phone. MSI only actually made four models of Radeon 7000 series cards, period. And it's been out for a couple of years now, as opposed to 147 GeForce RTX 40 series cards. Considering how much more that GeForce sells, it makes sense that it would skew that way. But just for some context, the last generation, MSI made 39 Radeon 6000 cards and 128 RTX 30 series cards. So it seems like MSI is actively pulling away from Radeon graphics cards.
So I've seen this taking to the next level of people being like, oh no, Radeon's doomed. There's a partner who's getting out of it because it's not lucrative enough, or it's a, you know, bad relationship. Like, is there anything we can actually extract from this? Because I feel like there's a lot of talk out there.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything concrete we can take away from this until we see what the next generation brings. This Radeon 8000 is rumored for later this year. The MSI still doesn't show up. But, you know, that's fire in addition to all this smoke. But for right now, you know, it's kind of a soft time for graphics cards, especially for the Radeon series the last couple of years. Intel's out now trying to get people. EVGA, you know, exited business. So we saw ASUS trying to roll out really high-end 4090 graphics cards that kind of competed with what EVGA's Kingpin used to do. Maybe MSI is just kind of filling in. Someone has to make up for all those EVGA GPUs. Maybe MSI is just reallocating its resources to do that. But yeah, it's kind of awkward. Doesn't look great for Radeon. But kudos to Hardware and Box for noticing it, and to Hardware Lux for following up on it.
Yeah, and also I want to point out there's a video card story that shows for the launch of the 7700 XT and the 7800 XT, launch partners on the official AMD slide include ASUS, ASRock, BioStar, Gigabyte, PowerColor, Sapphire, XFX, Yestin, and another brand I can't pronounce. There's no MSI on there. So,
I mean, other than the GRE, those were the other two new GPUs to launch. Interesting.
I mean, do you think that this wind down in the 7000 series, the scarcity, is just a result of them winding down production of these as we get closer to RDNA 4, so they don't have overages left? Or do you think that, like, because to me, it's a little far out for that, it feels like. But if they haven't been selling particularly well, then it makes sense that they would just stop producing them and start and produce cards that are selling better, right?
Yeah, it's possible. Go ahead, Brad. Sorry.
GeForce clearly sells a lot more than Radeon does. If you look at the Steam hardware survey, which has plenty of flaws, but nevertheless, it's a good, useful thing to look at for broad insights. Like, even the 4090s outsells the most popular Radeon card, and that's a $1,600 GPU. And considering the fact that MSI only, apparently, I haven't double checked, but Video Card says they put out four Radeon 7000 cards total, and they weren't part of the 77 or 7800 launch, it kind of seems to me like they're backing out the door.
Well, and also the fact, yeah, the fact that they didn't produce 7700 and 7800 XT.
Yeah, that's telling too, I guess. But I mean, yeah, it seems like they want to keep the door open in case. Like, it seems like they just want to maintain neutral territory, maybe, so they can keep making whatever's going
to. And this is definitely not an EVGA scenario, right? Where they're publicly coming out here and being like, oh no, we're out of here.
No, it was the exact opposite. Oh, sorry, Gordon, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the exact opposite. They said in that quote that I just read out loud, you know, we're still working with AMD, but note that they also said, hey, especially in the area of motherboards. So these are complex businesses that have all kinds of parts that are separate from each other, motherboards, GPUs, CPUs, etc. So I wouldn't expect them to be anywhere near as vocal as EVGA was if they do decide to get out of the Radeon business, but I think at best at this point you could say they have a toe in the water.
Yeah, and if we're sticking to the relationship analogy, I don't think this reads at all like that, because this is more like, you know, if there was a, you know, it's a separation period, it looks like. This is not the same as EVGA, which was clearly somebody showed up and lit somebody's car on fire, or cut the leather seats, climbed into the sunroof and cut the leather seats in their car up.
It's like a Taylor Swift song.
Yeah. That was, yeah, I know, like a Taylor Swift. What is up with that? Like, can we ever? I will feel really bad for that when it breaks up. But I do want to caution people not to overreact, because if you look at the statement, it's very carefully crafted to say our focus at the moment is actually more on RTX cards.
Yeah.
So it just could be like, you know what? We didn't really make a lot. We weren't selling them. Maybe we'll catch you in RDNA 4. We'll see how it goes. You know, so I think people are reading a lot into this. And of course, you know, people think like, oh, it's, you know, I think I've seen theories that said this is Intel because they did the claw. You know, Intel obviously clearly bribed MSI to not make Radeon cards to make the claw. It's like, how do you even get there?
Yeah, that's a stretch.
That makes zero sense to me. And then the other one, of course, is like NVIDIA is being mean to AMD again. But there's zero proof of that. It just simply could be a business decision. Like, maybe their Radeon cards just were not competing with other Radeon cards out there. And you know what? Again, if it's all indicators are generally Radeon's sub 20% of the market anyway. And if they weren't a big player, let's wind down inventory and we'll wait for the next one. We don't know. So again, until MSI comes out and actually says something, or AMD comes out and says something, it's all conjecture. So people shouldn't freak out and start, you know, coming up with crazy theories.
Well, and the other difference is, of course, when EVGA pulled out of the, stopped selling NVIDIA, broke up with NVIDIA, they also pulled out of the graphics card market entirely. They were like, this is market sucks. We don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
MSI is looking at this and they're saying, okay, we can fight tooth and nail for 20% of the GPU market, or we can fight tooth and nail for 80% of the market. And they're going to go, my guess is that they go whichever way that 80% is, right? If AMD has a good generation next year and comes out with RDNA, the new cards come out, and they have like a big chunk of the mid-range market, this, you know, the sweet spot of the curve, then they'll start making AMD cards again, right?
Right.
And I think it's interesting the timing of things outside of gaming. Like, yes, traditionally always AMD's had around 20%, GeForce 80%. But when you look back at mining, Radeon cards sold pretty well because they were very good at mining.
Yeah.
But now we are in the AI era where tons of people are buying this to toy around with AI, and NVIDIA is clear in a way the leader there. Mm. Like, hardware, software, you name it, NVIDIA has a leg up on AMD. So if you're choosing to focus on one, you know, business or the other, it totally makes sense for MSI to be like, okay, we're going to try to double dip with the AI folks and the gamers.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I will say I did reach out to MSI for comment, because that comment that came through on Hardware Lux was from a German rep. I wanted to see if there was any sort of reps that we deal with that are willing to comment. I have not heard back yet. So, you know, if they do comment, we'll update people. But Gordon,
yeah, I just want to caution again people not to read too much into this, because, you know, nobody knows what's going on. There's no indicators that anybody else is like, you know, we're kind of backing out. But if you saw like other big AIBs kind of like, yeah, we're getting out of this, then there's cause for panic. But this is probably not a huge deal to be overly concerned about. But as we know, the internet only has one setting. So,
well, and I mean, it is, I mean, apart from this, there are a lot of things happening in the GPU space. A lot of people are noticing inventory clearing out. Some things are starting to get a little overpriced. Some are starting to get a little underpriced. We know that later this year there's going to be new generations, hopefully all around,
yeah.
from all the companies. So we're in an interesting time. Brad, do you think this is also, hey, Computex is around the corner, you know, that there's going to be some big information coming out around there?
I wouldn't expect that from MSI necessarily. I think it's very likely. Nothing's been officially confirmed yet that we'll at least get a new NVIDIA generation this year. I think it's likely that if NVIDIA does that, there's a good chance that AMD does as well. Computex seems a little early. But I think that if MSI was waiting for a big blowout blitz at Computex, they would have said, we're going to have plenty more to show at Computex in June. So stay tuned.
Good point.
But we might very well see new NVIDIA and AMD generations announced or at least teased, but I expect it to be later in the year for it to get formally launched.
Got it. All right. Well, we'll keep watching this situation. Any other last thoughts, gentlemen, about this? Or
we want to get into the crazy theories. Do you think MSI would do Battle Mage? Do you think it's like, you know what? They have to make space for Battle Mage budgets. Engineering, do you think it's possible they could bump, you know, again, if they were not a big player with Radeon, is it possible they just want to like try to bet the farm on being big with Battle Mage?
What's Battle Mage, Gordon?
This is Intel's next
Intel,
generation.
Yeah.
Discrete card.
I mean,
they could.
I guess it depends on how exciting Battle Mage is. If Battle Right. Mage is truly exciting, then yeah, maybe MSI is seeing that on the back end and is like, okay, here we go. Let's gear up for it.
Well, to date, Intel's manufactured its own boards, right? Its own GPUs, because they presumably couldn't convince somebody else to buy into
that
market.
They had partners.
Oh, they had partners?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they have Sparkle. They have
ASRock.
ASRock. Yeah.
Okay.
So they're smaller ones.
Smaller ones.
So
getting
a big one like MSI would be big. I'm just super interested in this because traditionally in the graphics card space, there's the three big Asian companies that kind of straddle all the companies. So like Asus, MSI, and Gigabyte, they're like, we'll make whatever. We'll make tons of whatever. It's just we're here to make computer parts. So to see MSI pulling back on that from AMD is kind of interesting to me.
I don't have a good sense of where, like, what the market split is between Asus, MSI, Gigabyte, ASRock, Sapphire, you know, all the smaller people at this point either. Like that's been kind of opaque for a long time to me now. And like the sense I have is that Asus and Gigabyte are the bigs. Asus is the big, Gigabyte is slightly less big, and then MSI is kind of trailing in those thirds, and then everybody else is kind of the like a small chunk of the market, splitting up a small chunk of the market after that. But I don't know if that's actually accurate because like they don't report numbers in a way that's meaningful that I can tell.
No, you can't. You can't parse that. No, it's a pain. You can try to shake analysts and get some backroom data, but nobody ever publishes any of that. But that's the same broad impression I have. I think that the specialty ones, like the former EVGAs and the Zotacs on the NVIDIA side and XFX and Sapphire and AMD side, they do great work and they move decent numbers themselves. But, you know, Asus, MSI, and Gigabyte were the only one that straddled all the brands. So
yeah.
It feels like we're losing something here.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of when AVGA got out of this. It felt like maybe the AIB model, like the smaller AIB models that weren't diversified, they didn't have the resources of and diversification of the big three. It felt like it was a bad position for them because to make that last generation of GeForce cards was a big investment to get them. And I kind of wonder if we're continuing to see that happen where we just see the smaller AIBs just kind of get smaller and smaller and smaller because they can't lean on motherboard sales or servers or all these other things that these companies also make besides just graphics cards.
I mean, the small guys have gotten squeezed out of every other market over the last 20 years. So BM Lee brings up a good point too, is that those teams that work on the different GPUs are probably like the AMD team and the NVIDIA team at MSI are probably firewalled from each other. So if they're looking to either reduce or shift headcount, it's not like they can move those Radeon people over to the GeForce team to start doing more GeForce cards. They probably, like my assumption would be they have to move to a different architecture. They have to move to something different.
I guess.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it would make
sense.
Or they're
laying them off, which would be worse.
At the same time, as we know, the compartmentalization of information isn't always the best out of Taiwan. So I could see like, hey, just finish that new GeForce 1590. Okay, well, you need to work on the, you know, like, I'm working on Radeon now. You're like the same person doing the same. They just have to, don't share any secrets.
Here's a new email address.
Sharing it, but, but I, you know, this isn't like, you know, this isn't, I don't know if they have Nintendo-like firewalls. People don't know Nintendo is famous for like, and Sony are famous for like, we don't want you to be associated with anybody else. Well,
like Nintendo, even in the magazine days when we had the official books at a previous employer, they had to have like locked doors and walls when all the other editorial pits were just open.
I think the Nintendo magazine was like, you can't even be in the same building. Wasn't it? Didn't they actually have to
get
a smaller office somewhere else?
I think the OXM people could have like walls that you could climb over, but the Nintendo walls had to go all the way to the ceiling, so we had to do some fire code stuff, which is how I remember it.
Oh, like the new bathroom stalls, which really make me very, very nervous.
Like the tall bathroom stalls? You don't like that?
No, it's not the fact that they're tall. Well, they're also tall, but you remember how it used to be like you could crawl out from underneath? Like, a lot of the new bathroom stalls are like changing stalls at a restaurant, like, or at a store. You just can't, like, how am I going to get out of here if this lock breaks? You'll be stuck.
I've never had to crawl out of a public bathroom.
No.
I have twice had people try to crawl in under the doors. So I'm all for floor to ceiling.
Yeah, I don't. Okay. Like, I just wait for somebody to come get me if I get stuck in there and I have to crawl under the floor of a public bathroom. I'm good. I have a phone. I'll text somebody and be like, hey, I'm in the bathroom here. Can you send the fire department or something? And I'll wait 5 minutes. I'm fine.
Oh, good. So I don't have to awkwardly make eye contact in between the cracks for no reason.
Yeah.
For some random reason.
Look, I've gone out of my way when I'm downtown at like GDC or something to go to the Four Seasons if I need to go to the bathroom, because it's got like full wood doors with like a doorknob and a locking. Like, it's fantastic. Floor to ceiling. They pipe music in and everything. It's really nice. Yeah.
I don't know how we got here. I don't know how we got to bathroom stall talk.
You're welcome. But,
I guess maybe we'll be over in Taiwan soon. Maybe we'll check the bathroom stalls there and be like, hey, are you still making Radeon cards? What's the deal?
That would be a spectacular YouTube short.
Wow.
Oh, gosh.
Like, just sitting in the toilet talking to MSI engineers through the stall doors?
Hey, can you pass the toilet paper? By the way, can you tell me what's the deal with the Radeon? What's going on?
I'm just joking. Dr. Disrespect tried that. Don't do it again.
No. Wait, what? Humor here. Yeah, we don't. Somebody live streamed a bathroom at E3.
It was a terrible idea.
Yeah. Well, he's a terrible person.
Bad person, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from this talk. Maybe there's more information coming out later. Something that we continue to talk about, because there has been more information coming out and probably even more information in the future, is motherboards. So there has been some updates to the whole high-end Intel CPUs crashing. We have some more statements coming out. Gordon, I'm going to kick it over to you because you have some fresh information to share.
Yeah, slightly fresh, although it doesn't really change it very much. There was a report last week that Intel commented on the instability problems with i9, 13th gen, 14th gen. They didn't actually officially comment, and a lot of the sort of dog pile on basically said like they threw the motherboard vendors under the bus, but it doesn't look like they did, because honestly, it was a statement that was given to motherboard vendors that was not for the public. And Igor at Igor's lab got a hold of it and published it as like, hey, here's information, which is valid. I'm not criticizing Igor, but of course, a lot of people interpret that as like Intel actually saying, oh, it's the motherboard maker's fault. And I will say yesterday they actually released an official statement to a couple outlets. I know Anon had, and we got it as well. Intel did. And I will note the statement from an Intel spokesman. The recently published communications between Intel and its motherboard partners, highlighting that because it was not communication that was supposed to go to the public because they weren't throwing them under the bus, regarding motherboard settings and Intel Core 13th gen and 14th gen K-SKU processors is intended to provide guidance on Intel recommended default settings. We are continuing to investigate with our partners the recent user reports of instability in certain workloads on these processors. Bold. This BIOS default setting guidance is meant to improve stability for currently installed processors while Intel continues investigating root cause, not ascribe blame to Intel's partners. So again, Intel is not saying it's all motherboard vendors' faults, which of course is the narrative that the internet came up with last week. And of course it goes over a bunch of settings and like...
which we're showing right now on protection. The screen. Yep.
Okay, you're showing it. Basically, and you know, if you're seeing this, this isn't that new because if you followed this, this for the most part matches what we got out of Falcon Northwest previously. Basically, some settings that they have done in their build facility to improve stability of a build, and most of the settings seem to match what we're seeing out of Falcon from last week. So it doesn't change it very much, but basically. The main takeaway is officially Intel is not saying we're blaming motherboard vendors. It's not all their fault publicly. And they are basically coming out with these settings saying, yeah, you can run these settings if you want more stability. We do recommend that. And we are still working on it. Basically, they don't know what is going on. It's taking pretty long to figure this out. It's a fairly complicated subject. And the people I talked to previously said, yeah, it's going to take a while to come out with this. And also the statement that Igor got that was intended for motherboard vendors said, like, we should have further information in May. It is May, and of course, or in May, there'll be more information. So basically wait. Don't panic yet, I think is probably the best guidance. And of course, that doesn't matter because everybody's in full panic mode at this moment. So,
well, okay, so Intel saying, hey, don't blame the motherboard vendors. I think that's probably right. I think at the end of the day, whether like at the end of the day, Intel is, remember when Intel used to make motherboards and then you could put an Intel CPU in an Intel motherboard, and you know that it was running at what Intel expected it to run at.
Oh, the motherboards that nobody bought and made fun of.
I mean,
time.
Look, yeah. I bought them and one, yes, sure. One time some MOSFETs just fell, desoldered and fell off of it and the network card stopped working. It wasn't a great motherboard. But
what time frame was this? This is before my...
Oh, this would have been Broadwell era, probably.
The last... They got rid of making Intel boards.
X58, maybe?
Yeah, right? I mean, probably i7. Probably the original Gulftown, yeah. Westmere. I mean, that was probably it, and they gave up making on Intel motherboards.
Is this the same idea of like NVIDIA making Founders Editions, where it's like, oh, hey, here's a spec that we're trying to show everyone to go to? Or
no, I think they just sold for the first 50 years of Intel's existence, selling motherboard chipset was part of their business, right?
Well, I mean, as I understand the lore back then, Intel, you know, the Intel made processors, then you had third-party chipsets. They were all pretty bad chipsets. And then apparently it was like, you know, you're ruining our reputation here because you're, you know, back then it was pretty complicated. You know, it was a very immature industry. You had to deal with, like, putting cache chips on the motherboard, and there are all kinds of things that the board vendors may not have done right. So apparently, as I understand it, going back many, many years ago, Intel basically said, we're going to make our own chipsets because you guys are screwing it up. And then, you know, the classic, I think the original was a Triton. I can't remember.
Yeah, like it was 19. Like 486 days, I think, right? Socket 7 days?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago. So apparently they made chipsets, and the chipsets were so good that everybody's like, why am I going to buy these lousy third-party chipsets? So Intel started, you know, basically took over the chipset market for its own CPUs. I'm sure a lot of people say, like, oh, actually, it was just Intel gobbling up somebody else's lunch because, you know, they make the CPUs. If you make the CPUs, you have a deeper understanding of how to make a better chipset for it. And, you know, it's, I could see that being very reasonable because it was probably a decent revenue selling these things. And why not go ahead and do it, right? There's a reason why, you know, Intel has made, you know, Wi-Fi chipsets, well, right? Because...
And then they started moving. They started moving things off of the North Bridge and into the CPU, and like the CPUs and the chipset became more integrated until the point that it became absolutely necessary for Intel to make the chipset and the CPU as they were at the same time. And then they started bringing the add-in board partners. At the, I guess what I'm getting at here is at the end of the day, if even even if the add-in board, even if the motherboard manufacturers flew too close to the sun with their stock settings, it's ultimately Intel's fault for allowing them to do this, because they're licensing the chipset to them. They're selling them the chipset. They're not saying, hey, all of these settings need to have the same label across all vendors' BIOSes. Because if it's if this has become such a complicated thing and it's taking them this long to figure out, how are we as normal human consumers supposed to look at a motherboard BIOS and develop any kind of competency to be able to tune and set up these things when they're shipping overclocked and they're overclocked in unpredictable and understandable ways, not just for people like you and me, but for people like Falcon Northwest and the add-in board partners and everybody else. It's become untenable, and like they've reached a point where they need, you know, mommy and daddy need to come in and clean house.
Yeah, that's my takeaway from all this too. I think Intel's statement is very good and political, but my less good and political statement is this all sucks and everybody is to blame.
Yeah.
Because we've been complaining about multi-core enhancements and other motherboard stuff for a long time. We've debated it on the show time and time again. Most recently, I think, was when Asus was overvolting the Ryzen motherboards. I think that was last year, early this year. Again, time has no meaning these new times. But even before that, we had a whole like half an episode dedicated to how do you test motherboards, Gordon, CPUs, Gordon, because every motherboard unlocks different things out of the box. They're all named different, blah, blah, blah. They're pushing too close to the sun. But at the same time, as Will said, like in the end, they're getting these to support Intel and AMD chips. Intel or AMD can say, we want everything running at the baseline level out of the box, and you can have a software pop up that says, hey, to unlock more, go activate the Asus overclocking BIOS or whatever. And everything would be happy. I think this is a case of motherboard manufacturers flying too close to the sun with these multi-core enhancements and everything else over the last few years. On top of Intel flying way too close to the sun with power the last few years. And those two things have just come to an unnecessary head. And it clearly doesn't affect every CPU. Not everybody who even has a 1300K or 1400K says, hey, this is happening to me, but it's happening to enough now. And I hope the entire industry takes a step back and says, hey, how do we stop this from happening to normal people in the future? Because we need to do better.
For what it's worth, I'm not going to be surprised when this expands to all the K processor. Like, I think we have a 14700K here that's suspect now. I mean, we had the Asus board that I built my last machine in is, I think, probably a CPU killer, if I had to guess. So I think this is going to end up hitting all. My big question is, what happens if you put a non-K part into one of these boards to see what, like, is it actually going to run it at a real stock out of the box, or is it going to overvolt those two? And I don't know what the answer to that is, because I don't think we have a whole lot of non-K parts around to test with.
Yeah, well, I'd have to look.
And I do, again, you know, I want to caution people. We really don't have a sense of how widespread this is. We don't know how many parts. Nobody has come out and officially said we have X percentage or X number of bad chips. There are certainly, and that's not to say this isn't real, because it is very real. You know, we've got some in-house. There's definitely vendors that have had systems that have instability problems with it. But we really don't have a full accounting of how many parts it is. There are people who can run, they can run these chips just fine, stock settings in these boards, well, you know, default settings in these boards, and they're perfectly fine. There are people who run them overclock and they have no problems. And there's some people that have nothing but problems. So we don't know. But I think the main thing is people shouldn't immediately freak out and go like, oh my God, this is every single one of them. I want to caution people not to get to that point, because that's the kind of freak out that's just going to cause a panic. And we're not there yet. Is it going to happen? I don't know. But I will say anecdotally, I've certainly seen a lot of reports, and then also talking to people that make these things and, you know, in part of their business, you know, it's not like we're 70% of parts that are going bad, but, you know, it's enough that it's concerning to everybody. So I want to make sure that that is clearly said, because that context is often left out of comments on YouTube and Reddit and like and Twitter where people just want to freak out.
The benefit of how this has gone is if you are one of those small percentage of users who are running into issues, sorry, Will, you do have remedies for it now. So you have these ASUS baseline Intel spec. You have the MSI baseline Intel spec. The part that really amuses me in a deeply frustrating, not really amused way, is that what they're calling these baseline specs are drastically different. Hardware and Box did an excellent video this weekend that I went and watched where they took, you know, I think it was a 14900K, and they tested it with, and they put all the numbers out for the MSI and the ASUS, both their benchmark results after applying the baseline, as well as the P1 and P2 values that they use for those baseline. And even though it's supposed to be baseline, they are drastically different. MSI's kit takes way more of a haircut. ASUS still has very much more aggressive P1s and P2s.
What kind of performance delta what did they see? Do you remember?
With the ASUS one, it's not bad in games. It's 3-5%. With the MSI, it was a bit more.
Okay.
But if you are running into these problems, Falcon Northwest is the, you know, the big vendor who first put out a fix last week or the week before sometime. And following them on Twitter, Falcon NW on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, doomed. They actually said they've tested this ASUS BIOS and stuff like that, and it differs from the custom settings that Falcon Northwest originally provided, and unnecessarily throttles back performance. So if you're worried, if you're suffering from these issues, and you do have these new motherboard profiles available to you, it still might be worth hopping onto Twitter or X and looking up that Falcon Northwest tutorial and putting those numbers in first, putting in those settings first to see if it helps you. And it could avoid pulling stuff back even more.
And I actually feel like we saw something similar last year with the AMD stuff where the initial response was to dial things way back, to be like, okay, we're really going to dial things back while we figure it out. And, you know, and then be like, oh, okay, here's actually the middle ground. So I think maybe that's what happened here, is that they're like, okay, you know what, this is something going on here. We're going to dial it way back. If you need to do this, go ahead and apply it. It is going to affect performance while we figure it out. And then maybe going forward, there's kind of a middle ground somewhere.
So my question, and I think this is probably for Gordon, is if you have one of these CPUs and you're not having problems right now, you haven't had weird crashes, you haven't had the out of video memory, you haven't had EAC crashing, stuff like that. Like, do you download this Intel stability version BIOS? Do you apply the Falcon settings? What's your operating procedure right now? If you're sitting on what you're afraid is a ticking, like, maybe you're not even worried about it. Maybe you think it's like, look, Intel is going to replace the CPU if it conks out, right?
Yeah.
So what's the downside? Do you keep running it with the multi-core enhancements on, with the default BIOS overclocked? Like, what's your process here?
I think it comes down to everybody's comfort level. And again, the good news is Intel continues to support the chips. You know, if you do have one that goes bad, they will RMA it. The RMA process is actually pretty smooth.
Yeah.
But that comes down to your circumstance. I will tell you, on my daughter's build, we did a, you know, Corsair custom loop on it. If I have to break that loop to change that CPU, I will be pissed off. So,
oh, man.
On her machine, it is not running. We are not running it hard. It's pretty much, I'm like, you know, I just don't want to take a chance. It's an i7. And from what I've heard, i7s are like, yeah, it's an i7K, but the amount of i7s that are affected by this, even anecdotally, are very, very, very small. At the same time, for me, breaking that loop and dealing with that is a pain. So no, but if it were in my box and, you know, I'm running a CLC, I probably would just let it ride. Like, if I'm not having any problems, I'm just going to go with the defaults settings on the board, whatever I run, maybe XMP. But I wouldn't worry about it because, again, it's very easy to pull the part out and get an RMA and change it. But if that's something that is going to scare the hell out of you, then, yeah, you may want to download the latest beta BIOSes that all the board makers are making and apply them. Or, you know, again, I'll point this out. If you go to twitter.com/FalconNW, you can see Falcon Northwest's recommendations on what they're finding that don't actually nerf the performance as badly as some of the boards are. Most of the guidance applies to ASUS boards because they're mostly in ASUS shop. So be advised if you're running Gigabyte ASRock or MSI. I'll have to do recommendation.
I would actually take the opposite advice of you. I would give the opposite advice. I'm very worried about this, mostly because the fact that this instability is starting to show up months, sometimes a year if you have a 1300K after launch, suggests to me that they're pumping too much voltage into that CPU and it's degraded in some way. So I would be very worried about that, and I would personally be inclined to first try Falcon Northwest method. But if I personally hold on to my PCs maybe 5 years apiece, and if I was doing that, I would be very worried about this, and I would try to mitigate this as much as possible, because I think unless Intel rolls out an extended warranty that might fix this, even if you're not having issues now, if it pops up 4 years from now because things are just been getting overvolted and degrading for 4 years, I'd rather cut that in the butt right now.
Because Intel's warranty is 3 years by default, right. So we're coming up on the end of the 13 series warranties, right? We've got about a year left, probably year and a half, maybe, depending on when you bought it in the generation.
Yeah, true. Depending on when you bought it.
So, like that means if they aren't going to extend this because of this problem, which I assume that an extension will come, but who knows if it'll come in time for you to replace your part under warranty. And you know, maybe you pay to replace it, and you get a refund later. I don't know. I'm kind of with Brad, I think.
I will say I actually am running a 13900K in my home editing rig. I don't really game on it.
Yeah.
But also I haven't been pushing it that hard lately because I haven't been doing as much video editing. Thanks, Willis, for taking on more editing. And now Alex is here.
Shout out to Alex.
Yeah, there
Shout
we go.
Out to Alex.
So I haven't been pushing hard. And actually, I need to kind of downgrade my setup at home because now it's kind of overkill. But I have run into no problems with my 13900K. But I think the thing is that, like, if you feel like you're okay taking that hit, Are you okay doing it? And actually, I did put out a poll on our Discord, and I did post in X. I don't have a ton of people that follow me over on X, but I did put a thing out there saying, hey, so I did a poll on Discord. I said, are you willing to sacrifice CPU performance for stability? Not a ton of votes over there. Out of 23 votes on Discord, 61% of them, so 14 votes said yes. They're willing to sacrifice CPU performance for stability. The next one was 7 votes, and it said depends on how much you're sacrificing. I get it. I didn't clarify to say, you know, are you sacrificing 2%? Are you sacrificing 20%?
Yeah,
I totally get it. But there was only there's only one person that said no. Well, another one put bigger bar better. So, like, you know, I feel like most people are like, hey, you know what? I'm okay to take a little bit of a performance hit for pure stability. I mean, We've talked about that recently too, especially for work. If you're doing video editing stuff and you're uptime, you need to be 99.9% uptime. Yeah. It's worth it to be like, oh, you know what? The render takes 30 seconds longer or a minute longer. Then let's go ahead and do that.
For me, on days my computer doesn't work, I don't make money. So it turns out I like making money.
But a lot of people just game though.
Yeah.
So if you're just gaming, it's different. Yeah. If it's gaming, you're willing to be like, okay, you know, maybe I need to fiddle around with some stuff. Maybe I need to replace something if something goes wrong. But
on the flip side, I'm a grown-ass man with limited free time. And if I had something going on, like Will had going on with all the crashes in Fortnite, it would turn my relaxing after work hobby, which I realize might be slightly different for you, Will, into something that just makes me spits curse words and flip things. So I would take stability over performance.
So the other thing I was going to say is if people are concerned about this, one of the things you can do is just download that Intel Extreme Overclocking Utility, which I bet they're going to regret the name on that at some point in the future. Just run it. You don't change any settings. Just open it up on a second monitor and then do something that puts the computer under load and see where your voltages end up. If you're above 1.5 for extended periods of time, I think that's the warning sign, right? 1.5 spikes to 1.5 are fine, but you want to be in the 1.2 to 1.4. And a couple people have both in the Discord attached to my podcast after we did that video were like, hey, your voltages are crazy.
You mean Brad
high.
Will make a tech pod?
Brad Will made a tech pod, yeah. I didn't want to, yeah. I didn't want to pull, thanks for the plug.
Yeah, please. Awesome podcast.
But a couple people looked at that, watched that video that Adam and I made and were like, wow, your voltages are crazy. And then we started digging and we're like, oh, right. Okay. Something's not right here. Still, even on this, I think that was a 13900 KS or 1400 KS or something. I can't remember, but that high voltage is an indicator that you maybe have an issue cooking. And if you're not running at those high voltages, you're probably fine. Maybe leaving it at the stock settings. I think you may have won the silicon lottery and are going to be okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it probably doesn't hurt to go through and throw some of the switches, like making sure that Intel failsafe is off, not on.
Yeah.
Because it is a poorly misunderstood setting, which, you know, apparently the whole idea of Intel failsafe is if your system isn't posting, we will give it more voltage because that typically has solved the problems if you stability or not post. But in this case, actually, if you have a CPU that is not, you basically lost the silicon lottery and it's just not doing well, giving it more voltage is not good, right?
Yeah.
So I do want to talk about like the whole like warranty extension and all that. I mean, it's a really good question because if it turns out that, oh, you know, this is something that we need to extend warranties on because some chips may have degraded, blah, 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 then we would hope the right thing is done. But at the same time, I think that is getting too far down the road than we're at. Because if board vendors come back and say, yeah, we've determined there's 200, you know, chips across the globe or whatever in the U.S. that are affected by this, then you can breathe a sigh of relief because
I've owned 1% of them, just to be clear.
Yeah, I mean, you have the worst luck in the world. I just think I don't want people to freak out because, you know, you don't want to go crazy. But, you know, again, it doesn't hurt to go ahead and download the beta BIOS or apply the Falcon Northwest settings. And just to be safe, I think if you're that kind of like you want to be safe, I don't have a problem with that. I think it's a good idea. But I think people want to get to the end and we're not at the end yet. Hopefully we have a better idea when, you know, there's official word and they say like, yeah, we've determined it's this and this. And then also, I think we're going to have some serious thoughts about where we want the future of DIY enthusiast desktop to go, if you think about it, because we've now gone, because this is something fairly new. And as a reviewer, I will say I generally run, like I ran 4096. I did 4096 settings, which is unlimited power. And, you know, I do Intel stock and it's not been a problem. It wasn't a problem with Alder Lake. It wasn't a problem with KB Lake. It wasn't a problem with Coffee Lake. And we're having problems with these. So where the hell come?
Like they don't get the benefit of the doubt anymore.
Well,
right?
That was the question I had because, you know, in my journey of doing benchmarking and stuff, we've went back and forth like, oh, hey, do you just take the out of the box experience and say, hey, whatever motherboard I have, it's the out of the box experience and we're going to review it that way. Or there's some outlets who say, hey, no, we take actually Intel's guidance, which is, you know, usually a managed PL1, PL2 and ICC Max or whatever. Obviously this goes a little bit beyond that, but like, you know, you've traditionally been like, oh no, just out of the box experience. This is how somebody would receive it.
Yeah.
So, but it sounds like you're kind of thinking about how that would be in the future.
No, I will not change how I do things. Cause I think if you are buying a performance part, you want performance. It's just that we're now going to get to the point where how much do we want to overcorrect here? Asus, MSI, Gigabyte, ASRock, they don't add all these stupid settings just because they're having fun. They often do it because that's what the community has asked for. There are, you know, people who do actually overclock these things. People want the settings. They want the ability to run all these things unlimited. They want to do all this. They want to do all the tweaking. It's DIY. I want to do this. I want to do that. So now if we're going to, it sounds like people like, I want an Intel motherboard that's running below, you know, basically it's basically going to give me this baseline performance. So are we actually saying we want to buy a $700 motherboard, a $600 CPU, and then run the damn thing like, you know, and drive it on the freeway at 55 miles an hour. I mean, I think we have to decide where we kind of want to go, because here, look at this example. Remember when you can overclock an NVIDIA card really hard,
yeah.
right? You haven't been able to do that in a long time. Is that what we want out of our
Well, that's
CPUs
because
now?
They operate out of the box very close to their maximum. That's a little bit of a different thing. It's the same with AMD.
But like, still, I mean, should you – I mean, how much – so if we're saying we want to basically back off of all these crazy controls and the settings and the motherboards that no one even understands anymore or what they do.
I think you're taking that to the extreme. If you're talking to what we're talking about here, I've been consistent in my point for 5-6 years now. I think motherboards should ship with the baseline specs. I think that's what it would clear up all the questions about reviews as default.
Yeah.
And they should also come up with some sort of, yes, you buy a $700 gaming motherboard because you want to go in there and flip all these switches. So there should be some sort of software pop-up or something that makes people aware, something in the box. Hey, go into the BIOS. We know you bought an $800 motherboard for a reason. Go in there, turn on the ASUS overclocking BIOS, have fun, you know, do your own thing. But I think out of the box, baseline spec should be what it is. I've always thought that, honestly.
Which, once again, is the same for RAM. You have to go in there and enable the overclock.
Yeah,
so, like for me, that's what I would want as well. Hey, all these enhancements to get more power out of it. Not that it shouldn't be there. It just by default, this is how it runs, and you go in and enable those things. Just
you
like
you got to do it for monitors. If you have a 144 hertz monitor, you're only getting 60 hertz until you go in there and change it till it's faster.
But, I mean, my assumption when I built this, because the last machine I built was a 9900K. My assumption up until that point was, hey, when I put the CPU in and boot it the first time, it's going to be running what Intel says to run, and then if I want to go faster, then I have to press some buttons, right? And I don't think that's an unreasonable assumption.
I guess the thing is, the reality is, again, everybody here is fairly advanced. Everybody follows all the tech websites, Reddit, and all the stuff. The average person who builds a DIY gamer box is never going to do any of that stuff. So they basically end up with bone stock, less than stock, settings in their motherboard, and they're going to give up performance for the most part.
But you can't have less than stock if you're shipping the stock settings.
Well, we're seeing that right now, right? Because what exactly is baseline?
Well, I know, we're in the overcorrection part of the curve right now.
Well, once again, I think where it settles.
Well, so again, if this turns out like everybody starts pounding on the table and they want, like, I want baseline, which is like everybody's pounding on the table now, I want baseline. And then if the board vendors take a hit, Intel takes a hit, and everybody's beating up on them,
for what it's like,
why not just lock everything down? You know, why?
That's very different.
Yeah, also,
that's
also
a thing. Baseline,
and that's going to the
add
extreme.
On top.
Yeah,
I mean,
again, an XMP is still an overclock, right? You are still running beyond JEDEC speeds. You are stressing out and we know not every single 13 and 14 gen is going to give you, you know, 8800 clocks out of your memory. So it's not, you're still overclocking. So there are risks.
Which I will say, Gordon, though, like, so then I'm sorry, I'm not picking on you here, but if you're saying in what you like to do for reviewing CPUs is having out of the box settings, then why would you go in and enable XMP on the RAM? Because that's not out of the box.
Well, because it's not even, so like when I did 13900K, it was, you know, 4096, 253, and the 320, you know, and you test all of them, right? But my feeling is I want to give people the actual experience, try to get it as close to what they're probably going to get from a performance motherboard with an i9K part, right? Or an X Intel AMD X part. You just kind of want to get as close to what would be representative of what an end user would get. And the reason why we often do, I will set an XMP is because then it turns into this like massive, like, why didn't you set XMP? Cause you get yelled at if you run, should I be running 4,800 DDR5 with Alder Lake, or should we try to clock it up a little bit? Because that's what, you know, as a reviewer, you get batted around by everybody because everybody wants you to set their setting. And they ignore the fact that there's other people that want different settings. So you have to find a happy medium.
But I mean, I don't think any of us are asking for the motherboard vendors to not have like an overclock preset, right? Have their out-of-the-box overclock, right? All I'm saying is when you put the CPU, boot it at what Intel says is right, and then have a on that easy page of the BIOS that we all turn off immediately, have the one that says, yo, overclock this, and you click that, and it switches to the ASUS's, I've said this so many times now, I can't remember what it's called.
The MCE. Multi-core enhancement.
Right, yeah. And increase the voltages and turn off the PL0 upper limit and all the things that they do to juice those benchmarks. And like I think it's totally fine to have the option, but I think that should be an... I think, hey, decrease the life of my CPU should be opt-in rather than opt-out.
Well, here's another way to say it.
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah. But here's another way of saying it. What performance is it degrading too much? Like, are you willing to say, hey, if out of the box it's, you know, just these basic settings, and guess what? I'm losing 20% performance over what I could be enabling just for stability. What's the percentage you're willing to take?
I'm much more interested in the lifespan. I care much less about, like, the...
I mean, look, but it's hard.
Computers are
hard
crazy
to
fast now.
That's hard to measure.
No, I know,
because
like,
you have no idea what the lifespan could be. So would you? I mean, you got to err on one side or the other.
Look, I buy the expensive one because I want it to be fast, but I also need it to work reliably. And when the moment they mess that up, then I'm going to counter. I'm going to swing back hard in the other direction. Right? That's where we're at.
And I think that's the thing, is because we, again, this is that overcorrection. The reason why, frankly, I've never had a problem, like, you know what, I'm going to run this thing at this very high performance, you know, power settings, because, again, 7th gen, 8th gen, 10th gen, Rocket Lake, whatever. Like, did anybody have problems with that? Alder Lake? No. So now we're hitting this bump in the road, so now everybody's doing their freak out. So now... everybody suddenly is like, whoa, I'm going to affect the life. But again, if you went to map previous experience, it just very extremely rarely had problems. And now it looks like there's a little more. So that I'm afraid of this overcorrection here. And frankly, Will, maybe you should buy a Xeon.
Look, right? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three times, I'm switching to AMD. That's
actually
where I'm at.
Now he's using AMD. Yeah. So.
I've always, just to be clear, I've always said I wish that motherboards defaulted to the Intel spec and opted in. So for me, at least, I've been consistent with that. But the ironic part about this whole conversation is I suspect it's one that hopefully we won't ever have to have again.
Let's hope.
Because even if they keep things as is, and ASUS and MSI and Gigabyte just keep clocking everything to 12, past 11, I wouldn't be surprised if a big part of the issue here is just that the desktop 14th gen parts are just coal furnaces, man. They just require so much power. And Intel's going to have to switch away from this architecture soon. And when that happens, I suspect things like this aren't going to pop up. But I'm hoping valuable lessons are learned.
For what it's worth, I feel like Gordon and I have had this argument at about once a decade for the last 25, 30 years.
Yeah.
So, the other question I have, as you were talking about, warranties only being 3 years, I wonder if there's an accelerationist answer to this too. Like, if you're sitting on a 13900K and you're wondering if it's going to last, like, maybe you should just turn MCE on, crank those voltages up, and burn it out before the warranty goes, so you get a clean one that you can start fresh with.
Rockstar life, burning brightly. Yeah. Yeah.
We're not condoning that necessarily.
I don't think it's a good idea,
yeah.
But it's an option.
Well, they discontinued 13th gen, so I guess if they don't have any left, maybe you get, you know. But no, yeah. I mean, that'd be terrible, right? That's abusing the system. People like that who abuse the system are the reason why, like, they, you know, like, I've heard stories about people bringing, like, a TV back to Costco after 4 years, and, like, they should take those people, take a picture of them, and, like, put them on the outside of Costco with a shame sign.
I think. But I mean, your receipt says you bought this, exactly four years and 364 days ago.
But, like, I can look at a TV and say, oh, it, you know, it's burning in, I should deal with this, right? There's some problem with it, whatever. I can't look at a CPU and see that there's degradation because of overvolting. I can't even really tell that it's been overvolted if I've installed a BIOS update that turns off the overvolting in the past. So, like, it's a little bit of a different situation versus somebody who's abusing the warranty at Costco and somebody who's like, man, I need this computer. Like, I keep computers for 10 years. I need this thing to last. And I was running what I thought was stock settings, and maybe it wasn't for the first 2 years of its life. Like, I don't think that's a fair comparison exactly.
No. I mean, I just think it's like, again, it's because you are one of the people who's affected. You're having a freak out, right? Frankly. And I think it's like, but again, for our expectations have always been, this has not been a problem, right? Like XMP, setting an XMP, the attitude for most people is, I can't break it. If I could actually break this product, they wouldn't give me those settings to break it, which we know is not true, right?
Yeah.
So maybe people just have to sort of tune those, your expectations, because again, you are buying a performance part, and if you're going to push it and massage it, then, you know, unfortunately there can be some risk. But I mean, I'm with you. Hopefully this is just, this is just a bump in the road. And again, we're getting the cart in front of the horse here, because it could come out like, oh yeah, turns out Gordon was working on the fab and he was smoking cigarettes and the smoke affected, no, it looks like maybe 5,000 chips. We got it. We know, cause we have on videotape smoking cigarettes.
No.
And yeah. These, if you have this part to this part, then you know, we don't know. Cause you know, let's hope it's something that simple, because it could be something much worse.
It could be that they're like, hey, this affects these 20 batches of the 3,000 batches or 30,000 batches or whatever they've sold of these parts. So that is totally fair.
Again, if you're bitten, you're going to be like, hell no, right? Because I understand. It's perfectly reasonable response to it.
I can put a dollar value on what the bad 1,300Ks have cost me, right?
Welcome to Xeon, Threadripper. I mean, there's a reason why.
You're not wrong.
Again, it's very interesting. So we obviously know Falcon Northwest has published, you know, its settings. We know the other system integrators who cater to high performance customers, they've also been affected anecdotally. I've not heard big OEMs say like, yeah, this is a real problem.
Well, the big OEMs, they don't talk until it's, they're not going to throw Intel under the bus. Yeah.
Actually, those are the ones that they throw Intel under the bus and they run Intel back and forth. And then the big OEMs are the ones that actually have a lot more power. But probably
not publicly.
Yeah.
They're probably not.
No, they would.
Lenovo's not going to come out there and be like, hey.
you tell Michael Dell to call up somebody at Intel, and people are like, oh, yeah, okay, Michael Dell's calling about this problem. So I think the thing is, what I'm saying is, the community regularly craps all over the head of tier, you know, like big, like really big companies. Their game machines suck. Look at this boards, ugly colored, blah, blah, blah. Those boards are always, always extremely conservative, right? They don't like, there's no MCE. You go into a Dell BIOS, it's like, what? There's like nothing in there, right? I'm sure. I frankly haven't looked, but I'm going to guess those are very conservative systems.
They're probably also not selling Ks at Dell.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they do, because they sell them because
people buy the fast one.
Most people buy K parts and X parts and never overclock them, because you just think K and X is better, right? I play games. I do this. I need K. I need X. But what I'm saying is, if you want a super conservative feel for this, that's going to give you reliability, and that the thing, like, it'll probably run for the next 10 years easily, right? Then you buy one of those pre-built boxes that you've been like crapping all over their heads about, and it's going to be slower out of the box. Than an SI box.
Right? Hey,
I'm just playing devil's advocate. I just want to see how people react.
Hey, buy a Dell or hey, buy a Xeon, because our other computers aren't stable enough for you to use for 8 hours a day, isn't a real good selling or argument for continuing to sell your processors to me.
Have you not heard of the Gordon Maung Power Supply Company?
That's true.
I'm going to start selling my own line of Xeon. I just think. No, I know. I agree. And again, there's the reason why right now is a terrible period, because not knowing causes a ton of damage, because people are like, oh, is my chip bad? Did I hurt it? You know, or what's going on? And it's a terrible situation right now. And hopefully it clears up and gets better. But I don't know. I have no idea. It could be like, oh, this could be an oh crap kind of situation. We don't know. Right. Like 12 volt high power, like people originally thought, like, oh, there's something. I originally, like, one of the theories I had is, like, is there something fundamentally wrong with 4090? Like, it's overdrawing power and, like, it's melting these things? That was one of, like, pet theories. You know, 2 months later, it was like, ah, you know, actually, it's this crappy connector and, you know, it's backed off because I was doing wire, you know, and I'm going to hope it's going to be something like that. So,
Willis, you have something.
Oh, no. So earlier in the chat, Z530 says, you know, for this argument, I'm afraid the person making the important decisions are the lawyers, unfortunately. What do you guys think?
True. Yeah. Yeah. Lawyers.
Well, I would point out for, and this is Intel history, they are familiar with these situations. It's called FDIV bug. Look it up. They ended up replacing all those Pentiums. You can get them in cool keychains at the Intel store. They also, there was a RAM bus chipset where they built a translator to run DRAM because it was cheaper. Turns out there was a bug in that, RDRAM to DRAM. They recalled every single one of those motherboards. There was a problem with some early, like Sandy Bridge boards, just some SATA. Intel generally is, because of their experience and understanding the liability, they generally play it very, very conservatively. So I think they understand. Historically, the culture at Intel has been, we would rather eat the cost of this rather than to take the risk of you know, your Excel giving you the wrong answer or things blowing up. So I would hope that culture still exists there and that's what happens. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I would imagine if you look at the history of Intel, again, I just gave you three examples where we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in recalls and they did it. So let's, you know, I let's hope that same thing goes on here if it is that bad. Yeah. So,
yeah, we will see. The development continues. I actually did like hearing from people like how much they're willing to sacrifice performance for in the name of stability. Definitely more people.
You want to buy this Dell Core i9? You know, it's a little plain looking, but you know, not as blingy, not as fast as. What would they say to that? They're like,
maybe say that in the comments. Let's I like hearing the different ways people use PCs. So
I can't wait for the quote Gordon Mong says, "Just buy a Dell."
Yeah, it's just stable. Buy a Dell, dude. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying,
shill,
you know,
Dell shill here, Gordon.
Yeah. Well, because people are like, "Well, how come you don't like buying, you know, one of these?" Well, I like all the freedom in the BIOS and all the stuff. It's like, okay, you know, it's sometimes it feels like we can't decide what we want, you know, and again, I don't overclock anymore. I don't really need to. So,
well, you don't overclock, so you don't run XMP.
I have 120. The amount of memory in this machine.
I'm just, I know. I'm
actually,
just
I did run it for. It's like it was pointless because it didn't get any faster. So,
all right, we need to. We will continue to monitor this. Let's switch over to Q&A. If you have a question, get them in the chat right now at PC World. If you're watching or listening to this later, go over to youtube.com/@thefullnerdpodcast and subscribe over there. While you're at it, leave a question. I'm just kidding. You can't leave a question over there. Go over to our Discord. We have a question channel that we can you can drop questions. I just new people. Hey, FYI, if you're just joining us, the Full Nerd will be moving from the PC World channel to the Full Nerd Podcast channel.
We're getting our own channel.
Yeah, at the Full Nerd on YouTube. At the Full Nerd Podcast on YouTube.
Oh.
Anyway, youtube.com/@ the Full Nerd Podcast.
That Not Us channel is going to get so many subs this week.
Know, right?
You're going to be so excited.
Subscribe over there.
Yeah.
Future podcast episodes will be going up over there. Anyway, let's get to some questions. I do have a couple super chats, actually, I need to get to that I did not get to earlier in the conversation. So sorry. Friend of the show, Skeet Sayer. Oh, wait, no. Friend of the show, Coffee. Gave us a $279 Canadian dollar super chat earlier. Said, Gordon, you were right. Season 3 of Picard was great. Gordon's
shout
right.
Out to Gordon.
Gordon,
it was excellent.
Shout out to Gordon.
That was like, just watch season 3, ignore the first two.
Yeah. Friend of the show, Skeet Sayer, gave us $5 Canadian dollars. Thank you so much. Always appreciate it. Said, Gordon, are 4090s part of the GPU sales? Are the China sales not part of that? I think they're referring to the statistics mentioned earlier about 4090 selling more than Radeons.
Oh, that was me. Brad brought that up.
Oh, that was Brad.
Yeah, that was me. That's just the Steam hardware survey. It's, you know, take it with a big punch of salt. But historically, 4090, 3090 has sold, outsold anything that AMD had on offer for current gen parts.
Got it.
And it was oddly a really good value buy.
They do actually include China, I believe, because I remember there's a big deal a couple years back where all of the numbers suddenly got way skewed month after month, and that's because they made a change to account for Chinese internet cafes.
Interesting. Friend of the show, Ginevra1G1, gave us a $10 super chat. Thank you so much. Said, I totally Misses from earlier. Still unlikely, but more likely that AMD is reducing supply of GPU because it could take that 7800 XT silicon and sell it as 3 7800X, and not have to bother with RAM cooling or board. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that was always the issue. We brought that up when we were talking when these first came out. It's like, hey man, NVIDIA just makes GPUs. AMD has to figure out, okay, I get this many wafers. What am I going to make out of it? CPUs are a lot smaller than GPUs.
Yeah. First time super chatter, Sam OV, thank you so much, gave us $5, said, motherboard suppliers are saddled with a lot of add-ons from the manufacturers. What do you think about debug LEDs becoming a premium feature? And Gordon, this is definitely something you've talked about before, where the motherboard manufacturers have to get saddled with all these extra costs because who's going to put it in the box? Well, we'll just make the motherboard put it in the box. What do you feel about LEDs becoming now it's a premium feature, but debug LEDs are a good thing to have.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it feels like what should happen because not everybody needs a debug LED, but it feels like everybody needs one. So maybe if they could coalesce around a universal interface, and then you could buy a debug indicator you plug into any, you know, either an ASUS MSI or Gigabyte or ASRock board and have it read the information out for you. There may be something on the market like that, but probably not as universal. I've seen some in the old days where, you know, you slot it into PCI, but I'll have to look to see if there is a universal answer for that.
I forget what they're called, but like cards have the thing where you plug it into the ODBI.
Onboard diagnostic too, OBD2.
Yeah.
That's how they, by the way, that's how they steal your car. So.
Oh, really?
Good. Don't steal my PC.
They, you know, because the genius of like, oh, I don't want to have to use keys. You basically amplify the signal from your keyless fob, starts the car up, they drive the car away, and then they go like, you know, a mile away, and then they plug in an OBD2 port, and then they reprogram it and add their own key, so now they have full control of your car.
Man, that's amazing.
And criminals are way smarter than I am.
What gets me is like, you've done all this, why aren't you in Stanford? Like, why don't you put your efforts into like...
So what you're saying is I should Bondo up my OBD2 port so that it's I'm safe.
People actually have ODB2 blockers that you can like screw in that try to prevent them from accessing OBD2. You would think they would actually add some kind of encryption to it, but you know, these are car companies, so no.
Wait,
no.
It's like a what is that thing you put on the steering
the
wheel?
Club.
The club. Yeah. It's like a club, but for the port.
So here's the real question. Why don't we bring the PC speaker back? Because those beep codes, turns out, it's a cheap, readily available interface. Two pins, a little spot piezo or a little speaker.
I mean, it's still on motherboards, so yeah.
Well, you could use your own. I mean, I have them. You can just, the header's still there. You can just plug it in.
They're kind of hard to get now, though. Like, you can't, like Brad wanted one. He had to go, other Brad, my Brad,
Shoemaker.
not our Brad here, wanted one and had to go, like, buy it off eBay, and it was a dusty old spider-infested thing. It was not new.
Yeah, you know, it does feel like, I don't know though, you know, because those speakers, sorry, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but it's like having a long conversation with Captain Pike after he's been like in that chair in the, what was that original Star Trek episode? What's the Star Trek themed episode?
Is the Menagerie, I believe, is that one?
The Menagerie,
yeah.
Right, like, hey, how's it going, Captain Pike? What do you think about this whole Intel? Yes, you're worried about it. Wait, was that two yeses or was that a no? Because I was. Wait, that's yes though. No, I mean those things sucked.
Well, and we have an old case over here from one of your Maximum PC Dream Machine builds, actually sent to us by Falcon Northwest. It's an old one. And recently I was like, wait, why is the speaker mounted to literally the bottom of the case, just like pointing
it's
down?
So loud.
And I can't remember. Yeah, one of you guys were just like, oh, yeah,
because so
it vibrates through the aluminum
entire
the
metal
case.
Frame is a resonance chamber for it, and it sounds like
I've not heard that. So,
yeah. Well, I that up. Like, I think what would be nice is not only, I mean, again, this is like fantasy, but not only for debug where you have to like, what the hell, what is an ASUS 7E the same as a Gigabyte 7E? I you know, like you're trying to like, oh, I don't know.
Oh,
and
true,
you look at
yeah.
it, but you know, they actually have tried like, over the years we've seen, I have a Prime board and actually it has an OLED on it that tells you plain language, like booting OS, enumerating RAM, you know, all this stuff. So like, but what if they could all agree to give you plain translated information in a universal plug-in adapter across any board that gives you that information?
Intel SBID defaults, failsafe. That's why we're not going to get that. Yeah.
But Gordon, who's going to have to pay for that little
motherboard vendors?
Exactly.
Of course. Again, because as we know, hey, gosh, and then for people don't know my joke here, it's like when we have SLI and Crossfire, how are end users going to get these adapters to run SLI or Crossfire? Well, it feels like it should go with the graphics card because you're buying graphics card, right? No, let's just make the motherboard vendors included.
Well, they have to be hard. They made them hard, so then they had to be spaced to fit the slots, right? It had to be the motherboard vendor because then otherwise the graphics card people would have to ship 8 of them.
I just think it's, and then like, I would think about like SATA cables. I mean, every single thing that you have to, like, there's always some extra crap that like, oh, this would be good for people. And
straight
the motherboard vendors have to throw in their box. But I mean, every single motherboard vendor is like, why do I have to include all this stuff?
Why do I have
Hopefully
a
they're like down
bench.
To like just giving you 2 SATA cables instead of, you know, more. But
why?
Good times.
Yeah.
Good times. I don't have a specific question, but there's a lot of people in the chat early on was asking us to comment on the EK water blocks thing. Gordon, do you want to? I know you've talked to our friend Steve over at Gamers Nexus. Have you been watching the coverage over the EK Waterblock stuff? Can you quickly summate the situation?
So there's been 2 videos from Gamers Nexus, Steven Burke over there. First video was like, oh, they're in full meltdown. They are not paying employees. They are not paying their vendors, allegedly. And it's turning into a major mess. And the second video, which he dropped over the weekend, was basically going into some of the construction of EK's business and all these interesting relationships, international relationships. And it is pretty amazing because if you look at the org chart that they were able to assemble, it's like, it looks like the org chart from 30 Rock, where it just points to 50 different corporations, and then it comes out that Shinehart Wig Company owns NBC. It's like, who exactly is in control of this? And again, I don't really know, and I don't think the video has gotten to the bottom of it. It feels like there's going to be a part 3 at some point, but it doesn't make you think that EK's got that bright of a future. We don't know. It's entirely possible they can get everything in order, but it doesn't look good. And it is the construction of everything doesn't look good. And the fact that there's, you know, the employees that are not getting paid. And I guess that is also not good. So I don't know what to say, except we have to wait and see what happens. And I will say it's a shame because, you know, EK has made some incredible products over the years. They really have really pushed custom water cooling to the limits. There's plenty of other competitors now in the same space, though, and it feels like the business model may be under stress because, by the way, it's pretty hard to sell 2080 Ti water blocks, you know, 4 years after the card has been off sale, but you still have the inventory. So it may just simply be the business model is not going to be the greatest, but it is unfortunate. So
that's an excellent video. I agree with everything you just said, Gordon. And just whoever's watching this, if you haven't seen, I'm sure most of you have, Gamers Nexus, they have 2 videos out now about EK water blocks and all kinds of things going on. I highly recommend watching it. I'm not sure how much relevant takeaway there is for consumers from these videos, aside from, you know, 5-year warranty on some BK water block stuff might not be around. So kind of shop smart. But the more eyes they get on it, you know, the people who work with them get paid. You know, the more pressure they get. So paying your employees always sucks. So.
Yeah, and you know, again, this is something we've seen from you know, Steve many times over over these investigations and exposés he's done. It feels like a lot of it's motivated because he feels the employees have been wrong there. You know, again, going back to, I can't remember the name of that system vendor, but this one with EK and with that previous system vendor, he very much feels like he's trying to get some kind of solution for the workers who he feels very badly for. So I think that's the lauded as well. So
crazy. Artesian builds is what.
Oh, that was it. Yeah. Cause a lot of the workers got left holding the bag there. So that was, you know, and that's, you know, I know last week people wanted to us a comment on sort of the journalism ethics of all that. And it's probably way too long of a answer for here, but I think it's, there's nothing, you know, I think it was, everything would be approved. You know, there are many forms of journalism that are practiced and different roles and advocacy journalism, especially to help employees of a company has been practiced by many places as well. So I think it's, that part is fine.
All right. A couple more and then we'll get out of here. Friend of the show, Denever1G1, gave us a $5 super chat. Thank you so much. Said ThinkPad boot beeps are goat. Hold your phone up to it and it gives you detailed info, including serial number. What?
That's incredible. I had no idea.
What?
My washing machine does that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There's a mode where you play it and then it somehow listens to the noises it makes and then they can tell you what the error is.
Well, so like a lot of this, the Google smart speakers do that with ultrasonic stuff. Like that's how they communicate to pair new speakers and stuff like that before they have Bluetooth in them.
Okay.
But I've never heard of this. Hey, we'll give you your serial number and stuff in an audio code that some app can decode on your device. That's amazing.
Wow. Well, I'm fully back on board the little speakers on the motherboards. So
yeah.
Oh man, I had no idea. Yeah. Look, you want to talk about buying something for stability? Go get a ThinkPad, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
Magnesium frame.
I don't want to sidetrack us too much, but this again gets like, because we're all saying we would love to have standardized, you know, postcode definitions that we could all have. But again, that's like it's again one of those things that sort of eats into what makes a motherboard brand a motherboard, right? Because if we're saying we want a page on these things, we want there to be standardized terminology that they all use. And I understand it because, like, I have no idea what this one from ASUS means on MSI and Gigabyte and ASRock. It's like they all call them different things across all the different models of motherboards. And it feels like people want them to use the same terminology. I think the problem for if you're a motherboard vendor is like, well, what do you think? We put actually work into this where, you know, we are doing special secret sauce and we think we should have the right to be able to make it different because ours might be different than them because there is exactly a reason why our motherboard is different from their motherboard and their motherboard is different from their motherboard. And that freedom and that chaos that comes with the freedom gives you the ability for them to differentiate themselves, maybe make themselves better. So, like, if again, everybody wants to knock everybody's head together and say, you need to call this, everybody needs to use the exact same definition, then I can see that the reason why there would be resistance to that from board companies.
That's a solved problem, though. Like, we have the graphics side did this years ago with OpenGL. Like, there's extensions that are vendor specific, and there's a core spec that you all support. And then,
what's that again?
What's Vulkan, Gordon? What does Vulkan run?
I don't OpenGL.
What is Vulkan? I'm curious. Is it running
like an
Steam
API
Deck
that anybody gave two craps about? I
solved technical. Wait,
that's the argument to Will's thing. Is that part of
yeah.
it?
He's
using it as an example.
The thing that the PlayStations and the Switch and the Steam Deck and it's
well,
like,
it's like, you know what? Isn't this the same as, sorry to get this too far, but like, you know what? Gosh darn it, NVIDIA. You know, this whole CUDA thing you got, we need a standard. You know, you need to just use a standard. That way, it just like, it makes the world better.
That's not the same thing.
Like,
there should be like a Jensen laughing at you.
Well, I mean, he's got a grill with money on front of him. He's lit it on fire, and he's laughing with sunglasses on. But the point is,
not the same thing. We're talking about nomenclature here. Like in Gord Mong's power supply company, it's no longer called PL1, PL2. It's NCC1 and NCC2. Because we want a differentiator.
I'm just saying these companies, they want to be able to have a competitive advantage against somebody else, and embracing open standards and being nice and being the same as everybody else, being forced to be the same, doesn't really support.
That's not what we're asking.
But this is an AMI problem, right? Like AMI could write, hey, here's the beep codes for the error messages, and then give an extension space inside there that the vendors can put their own stuff in. And then like this is not a difficult problem to solve is all I'm saying.
Well, for the postcodes, I guess, except that some boards will give you a different postcode because it's a different motherboard, right? It may have a different function, and so how do you deal with that?
It lives in the extension space.
Yeah,
we should move on to the next topic, man. Yeah. I'm so done with motherboards.
Agreed. Motherboards. Let me go back over to Discord. This is a fun one from friend of the show, mostly running at stock-ish. What do you think of Igor's Lab's forthcoming X-Apply thermal paste applicator stencil product? Do you think it will put to rest the PCMR's raging debate over the proper method of applying thermal paste?
No, nothing's ever going to stop that. That's an impossible
I still
solve.
Like just globbing it
it's
on.
It's terrible. You're an absolute monster.
I just like smother it, because that's how I make peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
But you're,
I like to just, I take the sandwich and I'm just like, how much peanut butter?
Your board is not a PB&J.
My motherboard is just like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You're putting bananas on in between that. See, the amount of goo,
peanut butter
that's
and
really
banana.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, okay,
and honey, peanut butter,
PB&J
banana.
PB&J scented thermal paste. We were talking about that,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, scented thermal paste. The stencil. I mean, this is I like the stencil idea. Will it stop me from just, you know, globbing on thermal paste? No, but it's at least an easy, quick way, right, to be like, hey, if this is a really good way to do it, then it's at least good shorthand for people who not understand.
The amount of paste you put on made me think that those people that use those graphite pads are on the right track.
Well, Gordon, what do you think? Gordon, have you read into this X-Apply thermal paste?
I saw the pictures of it. It looks nice. You know, there are other companies that have made stencils to apply thermal paste as well. We did a short on it. It was obviously pretty silly, but it's not a bad idea, especially for somebody who is new to PC building, because as we know, it probably isn't as critical as a lot of people say it is. So it feels like it's a good idea. I do wonder why some of the shapes that are on there, I'm not sure what. Like some of them are hexagons, some of them are circles, right? So I'm not sure what that does except look cool. So, but the graphite pads do seem like the way to go, right?
For certain applications,
I like the training wheels. They should be probably included in the box with the motherboard.
Going back to motherboards.
But why don't they? Thermal paste should just come with the motherboard because the CPU goes in there too, right?
Look, why does the cooling vendor have to put the paste on the bottom of the cooler? Why isn't the CPU vendor putting it on there? Think about it.
Wouldn't it make it easier?
Do they ever just get together in like, you know, just at a banquet, just in a office meeting, and just talk about who gets the costs, who gets the, you know.
You know,
yeah, the cost and all that.
You know, it's like the last. It's like when you're at a restaurant with five friends and like three people get up to go to the bathroom at once. You're like, oh man, I'm hosed.
Yeah, right.
Who gets the bill?
Yeah.
Who gets
the bill? Will knows that trick too, right?
Yeah. You always got
to
be
trying to say.
Look, I'm just saying, I got to go to the bathroom. Yeah. I'll be back in a little bit. You got to go.
All right. Last serious question from friend of the show, Pyrocumulus. What does Will Smith think of Meta's VR strategy of opening Meta Horizon OS to third parties, including Asus, Lenovo, and Xbox?
It's a really interesting position because it puts the third parties. It's similar to the Steam Deck situation, honestly, where the third parties are going to be competing with somebody who can afford to sell at cost and make money on the store sales. So I think more competition is probably always good. I'm going to be really interested to see what the headsets that come out in and like whether they're competing at the base level, like the entry level with Meta, or if they're we're going to see some premium headset designs that come out at a higher level. It is wild. If you told me 5 years ago that Facebook was going to be opening up Quest to other hardware vendors, I would have been like, why on earth would they ever do that?
Well, do you think that's a sign of maybe struggling times over there? And they're like, oh, crap, we need more headsets out there. Let's open it up.
I mean, they did in their annual report list a $50 billion total cost of that Meta Reality Labs. So they've spent a fair amount of money over there. And my understanding is the results are okay, but not what they wanted, probably. I don't know.
Or the other way you could look at it is that... you know, oh, hey, we're Facebook, we're going to make this spec, but we're opening it up to other people who want to make different experiences.
To me, it is an indication that I think they're shifting to, hey, we want to make the OS for this, not necessarily the hardware for this. We don't want it to be a full, we want to be an Android, not an iOS. Is kind of the vibe I'm getting. I don't know.
Well, and
so
now that Windows,
it's over.
Well, now that Windows Mixed Reality is...
done.
Viable either.
Dunzo.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I think at this point, like, there was a report. I don't know if it was corroborated, but that Valve has stopped making indexes, which kind of makes sense because there are other headsets that are higher end in that market now. I think a lot of people are probably using Quests that are hooked up with via the wireless link to do Steam VR stuff at this point.
Yeah.
Which is a much easier solution, doesn't involve lighthouses and all that stuff. Like, I think the thing that's going to end up happening is that VR is going to end up being a niche market until such a time as the headsets are less unwieldy, or when we can put on our glasses and we put the old guys just been to the eye doctor glasses that go on over top when you have your eyes dilated. You put those on top of your regular glasses, then I think then we'll see broader adoption of VR. But I think for now it's niche mode and Beat Saber and
Pistol. I thought Apple was going to save us.
I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but that headset costs $3,500, Adam.
Yeah, and have you seen all the latest news is that the sales are cratering. There's a report that they're basically, canceling production orders because, like, ain't no one buying them. And they were $3,500 retail, and if you go on eBay, they're, like, heavily, heavily discounted. So all indicators are, the Apple, whatever it is, Vision Quest Pro is now also failing. I kind of feel, I hate to say it, but it feels like VR is dead. I mean,
well, you've said
I don't,
that.
I don't think it's dead.
You
I think
said
it's,
that in 2015.
I have a stupid index.
Well, I think it's kind of in one of the lower stages of that Gartner hype cycle thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's good practical reasons. I think it will be around in the future in some way. I'm not sure if it's going to be the VR headsets, lighthouses, and everything that we've been doing. But, yeah, it's definitely not a massive consumer hit.
I wonder, has Apple started selling refurb Vision Pros that were returns? That's the thing.
That's a good, I don't know.
How much are you willing to buy it for, Will?
Oh, yeah,
$15. I've used one. I'm good. Like, I went over and a friend of the show, Norman Chan, let me come over and use his for a couple hours one day. And I was like, oh, I got everything I needed out of this. Are you going to charge me for this? Or he's like, no, you're good. You can just, take the dog when I go out of town next time. I was like, okay, you're good. They are not selling refurbs as far as I can tell.
Not yet.
Well, I mean, I assume that means that there's a warehouse of them piling up as people return them at the end of their 14 days. And they're just at some point the floodgates are going to open. Because it's not like they're going to just melt them all down.
Yeah.
I mean, it just feels to me like we've seen basically Microsoft fail at this. We've seen, Facebook fail at this. We've seen, not yet, but, some people would probably say that Apple's failing at this. These are multi-trillion-dollar companies that cannot get this right. And it just feels like, I'm sorry, it's not, I don't think it's going to escape. I think, I And for, again, I was a firm believer in it. I bought an index, but it's basically, it's getting sucked into the black hole. It's never going to escape the gravity well at this point,
well,
it looks like.
I think the thing that has become clear is that the big uncomfortable thing you strap on your face is something that most people aren't willing to deal with. And I think that, I mean, I don't know this. I don't have any inside information. My assumption is that everyone involved is working on things that look more like traditional glasses and less like a pair of scuba goggles. And like I don't think we're going to see real movement in the space until it's something, until we're talking about a product that is more comfortable to wear and that you can wear for extended periods of time to all day without having some kind of thing. And right now the technology is not really there, but like we've seen prototypes and we've seen experiments and we've seen research projects that give you something that's closer to that experience, but it's all like, it's nothing that's mass marketable, mass manufacturable at this point. So I think until we get to that point, we're kind of on hold. The one thing that I don't know anything about is what happened with the PSVR 2. It seemed like it sold pretty well out of the gate, and then it's trailed off. And it's unclear to me if that's just the normal console like launch and dip, or if that's a trend going the wrong way permanently. And I think we aren't going to know that until we see what Sony does this Christmas, probably with the new titles coming for that.
I think the indicators,
it didn't seem good.
Who bought it, they're just sitting there collecting dust, and they probably have the data to show like ain't nobody using the damn thing. So
yeah,
again, I think it's I'm sorry, it's done, it's definitely done, it feels like.
Well, what is also done is this show, we got one more super chat to get to. Friend of the show Joseph Frusky gave us $10, thank you so much, said back to Star Trek. How much of your computer technology has been influenced by Star Trek?
It's not me, but Mike Kreider, PC World staff member who's sometimes on the show, you guys might recognize him if you're watching. He actually built a badass custom keyboard designed to look like that interface, custom wood grain, injection molded, all kinds of stuff like that. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
It's super cool.
I mean, I think a lot of the industry was shaped by people who grew up watching Star Trek and were like, this is a version of the future that I want to see. And then they went out and built computers that reflected that, you know, especially the original series, but also TNG. Like, the people that are in charge now are the kids who grew up watching TNG in the 80s and early 90s. So
Mr. Meow makes a good point. Without anyone developing VR, how do we ever get to a holodeck?
I know.
Hey, man, all I know is I got a big screen and an Android-like data, so I'm good to go.
There you go. I like it. All right, let's wrap it up here. Once again, if you want to continue tuning in live and catching the full nerd over on YouTube, then go to youtube.com/@thefullnerdpodcast. Subscribe over there. Hit the little Liberty Bell. Hit it so many times that it gets a crack. You know, we got to ring that bell. We're not moving completely over there yet, but we are starting that process. So I'm trying to get it out there in front of people. Subscribe at the Full Nerd Podcast.
That's at the Full Nerd Podcast.
The Full Nerd Podcast on YouTube.
Because you have to say things three times, or else people don't.
YouTube.com/@thefullnerdpodcast.
Is that at sign or is that the word at?
Oh, crap. Yes, at sign.
At sign. Don't forget that. That's very crucial.
Yeah. And the Full Nerd. I'm sorry. YouTube.com/@thefullnerdpodcast.
There you go.
It's also worth mentioning if you're an audio listener, you listen on an RSS feed, old school. Nothing changes.
Nothing. Absolutely zero. And you're just going to skip forward past all this stupid talk and be like, Adam, why do you keep hammering this?
They're like, they're still talking about it. I can't believe this.
God damn. Unsubscribe. The actual link is pinned in the chat here. I actually have it in the description of this YouTube. We're going to put it in the audio one as well, just in case. It is linked over on Discord. We're gonna talk about this for a number of weeks, so forgive us.
Get used to it.
Yeah. While we make this transition, I just want to make sure that people are aware that that we have that new channel going. So anyway, check back next week specifically for episode 300 of the Full Nerd. We're gonna do something fun.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. We're gonna have a little party. You know, maybe there's some burning news, but you know, we're probably not gonna focus on the burning news too much. We're gonna focus on having some fun, looking back at the fun times, and just generally taking some questions that maybe aren't PC related. Maybe we'll take some PC related questions, but also there's a lot of good questions that people always ask about just random stuff. So ask us anything.
I have a question.
Ooh. Uh-oh. What?
I have a question right now.
Save it for next week. Kidding.
No, it's for. I need to know this before next week.
Yes.
So 300th episode.
300.
Mm-hmm. I need to get a party hat.
Yes.
Do we consider this a birthday celebration or an anniversary celebration?
Well, this podcast was born. So I.
Wow,
yeah.
Really? I wasn't here for that one.
Yeah.
That seems
we birthed the podcast.
It was awkward.
At some point, we talked about dilation on this exact podcast. So I'm going to say this podcast was birthed.
Can I get a pair of glasses that have a 3 and then 2 zeros on the eye holes?
I hope so. Okay. We're going to go to the party store and figure all
we'll
of
take
this
a look.
Out.
We'll
yeah,
see
yeah. So hopefully we'll have some fun stuff. Anyway. Until then, let me get that. To listen to us on the go, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music Podcasts, anywhere you can point your RSS feed or two. If you are on one of those services, please leave us a review. Every time you do, I read one, and it warms my heart.
Sometimes he's not lying.
His heart's cold and icy the rest of the time, so please read them. He's so mean.
Exactly. I want to thank Gordon for taking some time away from the Enterprise to talk with us.
Thanks.
And I want to thank Brad for putting down your cutlass and chatting with us.
I always leave reviews, but I never click the bell. Sorry, Adam.
Oh, crap. All right. We got to smash that bell. Will, thanks for hanging out, man.
Hey, always glad to be here, Adam.
Yeah, good times. And Willis and Alex are going to thank you for controlling the verticals and horizontals. Take us out of here.
All right. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Alex, for being here, shadowing, and great to have you on our team. Hey, Internet, thank you for tuning in. You are all asking in the chat right now, will there be cake? Come on. You know me. There's going to be cake. There's going to be some dessert.
Food.
There's going to be food for
food
sure.
Will be served.
Definitely. Will
Foods.
Be served. Yes. So tune in for the big 300, and we will see you then. Bye.
Bye.